searching for Canada's best startups. The Pitch Please Podcast. Hosted by Mike Thibodeau. Give us your best pitch.
Pitch Please.
3, 2, 1.
Connecting with Canada's startups to learn about their business and the amazing people behind them. Follow along and hear some of the most interesting ideas and startups from across Canada.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Pitch Please Podcast. Today we're talking to Julia from Treehouse. We talked to Julia about a year ago, so today we're going to be doing an update, learning a little bit more about Treehouse, about a bunch of different elements of the journey from MVP to, you know, a year in market, making revenue, growing the business. I think there's a whole bunch of great insights that Julia's going to share with us today. But before we go anywhere, I think what's most important is to learn what Treehouse does. So Julia, if you want to introduce yourself, give us a little background on what Treehouse does, and then we'll start talking about, you know, what's been up and happening in the last year since we last chatted.
Mike, for inviting me on today. I'm excited to give you that 1 year update. And with that, I'll kick things off. For everyone who doesn't know me, my name is Julia Slanina. I'm the CEO and founder of Treehouse. Treehouse offers a comprehensive virtual platform to transform really the way maternal care is delivered, ultimately improving those health outcomes of women, mothers, and families. Now, what does that really mean exactly, right? That's our overarching statement. But what we do is we really offer a practice management solution for allied healthcare providers that enables them to not only efficiently manage their entire business, but they do it all on one single interface. And then similarly, our wraparound maternal healthcare and wellness hub is focused for those clients of those allied healthcare providers. And that's designed really to help support families build care circles and stay connected to their circle of care. So that's Treehouse in a nutshell, Mike.
I love it. Well, I think one of the things that's going to be most important to understand, when we first talked, you had done this and you were starting to seek out care providers. And actually, maybe it'd be good to, you know, for listeners, what are allied health professionals? What are some of the health professionals that you might find using or through Treehouse?
Yeah, so these are professionals who work in healthcare settings, but they are not doctors or nurses that work in a clinical setting. So they support patient health and well-being to deliver comprehensive healthcare. So we look at folks like mental health providers. We look at psychologists, psychotherapists, pelvic floor physiotherapists, doulas, lactation consultants, midwives, dietitians, nutritionists, occupational therapists. There's a whole slew of them, but really what we're seeing that a lot of folks are using Treehouse are typically mental health providers from prenatal to postpartum or early childhood, sleep consultants, doulas, and those folks that really have like a private practice, a fee-for-service practice in Canada and the U.S.
And so where were you when we last chatted a year ago? Like, where would you say you were in your journey as a startup? And what has changed and where are you at today? Give us a little bit of that.
So when we last spoke, Mike, we were just freshly starting in the market and we were still actively selling to clinics across Canada. We have recently expanded to not only accepting Canadian providers and customers, but also American. And so our technology at the time didn't have all the bells and whistles and the feature enhancements that we have today. It was very much focused on what the provider needed from like a clinical tool. But now we've not only expanded that, but also have grown out kind of the experience of the client or the patient so that they can really stay connected to their practitioner. And then those practitioners can collaborate on that common patient as well. So that's been pretty exciting.
So you've gone through some massive tech improvements. It sounds like you've scaled to a lot more people, not just providers, but also everyday users that, you know, that need this access to care. What were like some of the major milestones over the last year as part of that, you know, evolution from, you know, an early stage platform, a little bit past an idea where you had some tech and you're starting to get your first users of the platform? What has changed?
Yeah, I think what's changed the most is that the platform's user experience has become a lot more seamless. The beginning when we spoke, Mike, we were you know, there's a lot of kinks that startups go through, and we still are working through that. We're not at that that stage where everything is finessed and everything is working perfectly. But at the time, there were a lot of, like, that user experience wasn't where it is today. And the reason being was that we didn't have as many users that were giving us that feedback as to what that onboarding should look like, what that customer journey should look like for them when they connect with their providers. So we've taken that feedback. We've taken customer feedback from providers and their end users, and we've made that a lot better. We've added other types of features for the clinical documentation. And we've also started looking at different distribution channels as to how we acquire those customers, those providers. And then how do we help folks get access to care on the other side of that community? So that's something that we've worked through over the course of the last 12 months.
How would you say, you know, for others that are in a similar space where they're testing and trying to get feedback, I think we broadly bucket feedback into, oh, we want feedback to make our product better. How do you do that? Has it just been organic? Do you have a systematic way of soliciting feedback, both from the end users and from the providers? Is it built into the platform? What does that look like? And what have you found to be the best way to do it?
There's been a lot of iterations, and you're constantly iterating. Even to this day, we're still iterating. We still get feedback on a regular basis. So first, what I will say is that as a founder, you need to be completely aware of the market trends that consistently take place on a quarterly, bi-quarterly basis, annual basis. You cannot be oblivious to what is going on in the market and amongst your competitors, first and foremost. I'll start with that. But specific to your product, what I would say is you need to think about how do you want to build that feedback model? Because there's a lot of models out there. And, you know, I had to really think about how will people actually give me that feedback? The type of target consumer that we have, the type of provider, is a very busy provider. They're running their own business. Time is of the essence. They are not going to give me a survey monkey or a survey that takes them more than 10 minutes to complete. I'm not going to get any of it. And the reason I know that is because I've tried. I've tried many, many times. I've incentivized them with Starbucks gift cards. No one cares. No one wants to do a survey for SaaS in digital health. Like, it's just not going to work. So what works? What works is finding people that really believe in your mission. So those are those early adopters, those early users that are not only committed to what your mission is, where you spend the time when you're onboarding them or giving them information to say to them, would you like to be part of, like, our referral program? Where if you give us feedback, we'll give you 1 month free on your subscription. Or if you give us feedback, or if you introduce us to five more providers, we'll give you 5 months free, or what have you. So building these type of referral or ambassador programs allows for you to connect with these people on a regular cadence. And then just being, I would say, flexible. Like, some people love to give me feedback in an email. Other providers give me feedback on voice notes, and they have direct access to my personal cell. And I don't love it because it's my personal cell phone, but I make it work because I need it. And I think that's really key for founders when there's so many different models out there. Find things that, even if you're a little uncomfortable with, try them out for a period and see if it works.
Yeah, I like what you talked about there. I think you hit it right on the head. A lot of people might assume structured survey is the best way to go. But to your point, like, you just might not get the feedback, and it might sound like, oh, no one's answering the questionnaire. Everything's great. But you embraced accessibility around this. You know, I'm the founder. Here's my cell. Feel free to reach out to me in whatever way is best, an email, a voice note. And you were sort of all embracing of those different forms of feedback and weaving them into the product. And I think that's super valuable, which is just take it organically.
But you said the word structure. And yes, a survey is structured. And what I will say, though, is as much as I give the flexibility to the customer to give me that feedback in a voice note or in a text message or what have you, I have a very systematic way that I ask them questions. I'm asking them to give me feedback on their onboarding. Like, I have a structure. So you need to be structured because you have a goal. My goal is to understand what you've done in the last 60 days or what you've done in the last 2 weeks as a provider. I don't just willy-nilly tell them to send me a voice note about their day. They can do that if they feel like it, but I really ask them questions as well. And I think you being prepared with what you want or what you may need for product, you know, enhancement or the goal is really critical too.
Got it. So be structured in what you're trying to achieve, but offer flexibility and have a more organic way of how you capture that feedback. And I think that's a great insight. Now, through that, did any of those insights guide the evolution of how you've gone to market and acquired new providers on the platform?
100%. We realized very quickly, I'd say in like the end of the first quarter, early Q2 of 2023, that our acquisition strategy was slow. It was slow because we were building rapport. It was taking far too much time to close a sale. That sales cycle was constantly longer and longer. And it's just not a sustainable model, even if you were to throw cash at. And so how do we find a way to attract providers to learn more about Treehouse, about how that software can help their practice and grow essentially our customer base, right? And then in de facto have those end users using it and getting access to resources and what have you. And we started realizing that going directly to them was just not okay. It was not quick enough is what I'm trying to say.
And what did that look like? Like, what were you just physically calling up and emailing different health professionals?
We had a model of how we would do that acquisition using social media, using digital marketing solutions. But we started realizing that even if we had a target, so for example, in a month, we had to close, 10 accounts, we were not closing 10 accounts. We were closing, 15 to 20% of those accounts. And it wasn't making me happy. And I was just not, I said, there's got to be a better way. Like, we need to think about this and we need to find a way of how we can, if we have a target of 50 or 20 or what have you clinics, how do we get as close as possible to those numbers? It's not resonating with them. What do we need to do to resonate with them? Is it because they need greater exposure? Is it because they don't trust us? Should we be working, pardon me, with a partner? And who should that partner be? So we tossed around a few ideas. We thought like, oh, should we go to associations? Should we give a lot of discounts? Like, what should it be? And then we realized what we really need to do is understand how people digest care in Canada. Specifically, we were focusing first in Canada. And like, how do I even as a mom, as a parent, I'm a millennial, how did Gen Z digest this? And so we realized very quickly that more and more Canadians don't have access to family doctors. And the place that they go to access care more and more are pharmacies. And pharmacies become really that gateway where you go and you ask your pharmacist about a psychologist. Do you know a psychologist? Do you know a nutritionist? Hey, my sister's pregnant, but her iron's really low. Do you know a nutritionist, by the way? And every pharmacist, no matter where you are, whether you're in northern Saskatchewan in a tiny community or you're in downtown Vancouver, they all have a Rolodex, for the lack of a better word. That's very 90s, a Rolodex. They all have a Rolodex sitting on their desk of people that they refer to. So that gives providers the ability to be almost showcased in a pharmacy because the pharmacy kind of says, well, Treehouse has access to providers. And so consumers can then access those providers, but those providers want to be on Treehouse or using Treehouse. Pharmacy is essentially advocating for them. So we said, let's test it out. And we did. And after 60 days, we started seeing just an exponential growth in closing clinics. We went from closing, 2 to 3 in a month to 17 to 25. So huge, huge growth.
Wow. So you've effectively become the Rolodex or the directory, if you will, for pharmacists, the trusted directory where pharmacists can say, hey, I know some, but to find the best list of ones nearby, use this directory. They've got a bunch of amazing providers on it. Go to Treehouse. It'll answer a whole bunch of that. You become the directory of authority for pharmacists to help kind of help their patients that are coming in seek alternative care that they themselves cannot provide. So I want to learn a little bit about that first phase, though. So when you were going direct to providers, there's some digital marketing, some organic, some direct outreach. Did that, looking back, did that work for your first 25 to 50? Like, would you have changed the strategy and jumped right to where you are now? Or was it actually okay because you were learning in that process? Because so many founders start, they've got the idea, they've got maybe one or two people in that network. And, there's always this notion of like, what is the way to get your first 10 or 20 customers? And then that might have to change for your next 100 or 1,000. It sounds like you went through some of that. Would you have still kind of done it the same way? Or would you have changed your approach from day zero?
I would have done it the same way. And the reason for that is because I built a very good rapport with those initial customers. They are my trusted network of ambassadors that can give me product feedback, that give me information about the way that they operate as certain types of providers, whether they be nutritionists, doulas, lactation consultants. They tell me about their industry. And so they become really part of my feedback, like my beta group or my user group that's giving me like UAT, right? That user acceptance testing. And so that is a critical piece, is to have that group of people that you can lean on and reach out to is really valuable. It's a slower model, definitely, especially if you're not pumping tons of money behind it. But is it something that is scalable and sustainable? No, it is not. But if it's something that you have to do because you don't have money, I say that it's a good one because you build connections in the community and they know who you are. And that's really valuable in those early stages, because if you have feedback from one customer, well, that's great. But if you have it from 20, even better. And that really helps you for your next step when you're trying to get that bigger group of people. So I would say it's a slower step, but it's a good one. And I think being patient is important as well.
What was that pivot moment for you? Like, when was the realization that this not scalable, high quality approach to getting the product into hands needed to change? Was there, maybe it was one day you woke up and you're like, this needs to change, or maybe it was more fluid than that. But, is there a magic number for you, or was it a moment in the evolution of the product that made you realize, okay, now is the next chapter in how we go to market and how we acquire?
Well, the way that I looked at it was the product itself had enough bells and whistles in terms of competing with what was already in market. And I thought, well, surely there must be an uptake at this point. And why not? It's not like we have a bare product that has like one feature in it. Nobody wants to use it. There's got to be a better way to get this in the hands of people, because the initial feedback that we're getting is very positive, and it is helping them, and it is helping their clinic, and it is helping their patients. So more people need to get access to it. It comes down at the end of the day in those early days, because you're trying to convince investors and you're trying to convince people to invest in your product, that you need to hit certain targets. And whether that's a revenue target or it's a usage target, I'm a very practical person and I want to see growth and I want to see the success of this company and the product. So if I look at a target and we're not hitting it consistently 30 days, 45 days, 60 days, well, then let's go back down to that drawing board and make sure that it happens. Because if not, we're going to be a dead fish in the water within, 3 months. So that was my wake up.
Got it. So sort of on that, like the moment of scale, and you let it play out for some days, 30 or 60 days. Oh, don't let that play out for a year struggling. Like,
don't fall in love with that. Move on.
Definitely. So, you know what? I'd love to even learn about, over the last year, the fact that you are now maybe 2+ years into this journey, That's quite impressive. Like a lot of startups, it's very hard to make it and continue to thrive and survive for that long. What's the ecosystem been like, whether it be from like funding? I know the health, and maybe you can speak to it because I know now you're in Canada and the US, so maybe you can speak to differences you're seeing across the two. But what has it been like to be a health tech startup, knowing that, you know, there's a lot of different categories, there's physical product innovation. I think we see a lot of money go into the R&D of that. There's pharmaceuticals, and I think we see a lot of money and funding go into that. But what is it like as a health tech startup and a SaaS provider in this space?
Well, I'd like to see kind of changing in the market as well as just kind of that knowledge about women's health industry, right? We play in this sort of like the femtech market space and femtech opportunities that exist that not only help women's health, but they help families' health. Treehouse in itself, 85% of our customer, whether they be provider or user, are women, but 20% almost is really male as well. 85% of all spending dollars in healthcare are, that decision is made by the woman in the household. So it's still very much, we're focusing on that women's health industry. And so what I often find myself is really educating folks about that industry. Of what it's going to look like over the course of the next several years. We've seen a lot of investment specifically in the US market in this space where we see, you know, companies like Maven, you know, clearing billion-dollar status. They're way past their unicorn phase. And I think what is important for folks to know is that this is an industry that's projected, you know, at a growth rate of over 13%. And we see that it's over $1 trillion by 2027. What we also know is that investing in women's health shows consistent positive returns on investment. Every one US dollar invested, there's projected of $3 in economic growth because of the impact that it has. It's not specifically just that care, but really different aspects of life. So that includes child and health services, that includes productivity. Investing in women's health, investing in family care allows for folks to not only go back to work, companies will see an increase in economic productivity. And we will also see just better outcomes, not only for those parents, but for those children from a healthcare standpoint.
Now, talk to me. Do you feel like there's a challenge in terms of investors seeing this as a high growth, high profitability? Is there just a lack of understanding maybe about elements of women's health? Like, what do you think are the things that are most often overlooked, misunderstood, or not understood well enough that people should be paying more attention to?
Yeah, I think they need to understand that improving women's health unleashes a very strong, powerful engine for change. You know, Bill and Melinda Gates pushed out a very intricate report on how this helps not only economies in North America globally, but also in low-income areas of the world where there's a lot of poverty and struggle. And what we've seen traditionally is that we try to just capture all healthcare and not focus in on how we can help women specifically or families in growing. And so I think spending the time to educate yourself, whether it be, you know, if you're part of a fund or you're at the head of a fund, to understand the impact that can give you as a return is really critical. Pause there.
Yeah, no, I think that's valuable. And are there elements that maybe Treehouse is putting out or things that you'd guide people to go look at to start to become more knowledgeable on this space? Or maybe they're just going to have to come see you in action at the next pitch competition. But where or how can people start getting more educated on the value of investing in health tech, in women's health, and things like what you're trying to solve?
I think just being open to the fact that there's a lot of market trends that have already been proven, right? Where there are a lot of companies that are far more advanced than Treehouse that have done this very successfully. There's a lot of data elements that can help. And it's whether or not there's just one piece of technology. Treehouse is one piece of technology, but the opportunities in the suite of that technology are so vast that it's not just, oh, we're building one SaaS solution for one type of provider. The way that we have architected our company is so that we grow and that there are a suite of technologies that can not only help as the family grows, for example. I think just seeing the opportunity is really important. I sit on the advisory board for FemTech Canada, where there's a lot of different types of technology in life sciences, specifically in women's health. And part of that is just, you know, educating that type of investor or the individual that's interested in this space about what has been proven, what are the market trends, and what is it showing us in terms of the impact of our economy. And everything looks very positive. It just needs more funding and more backing from capital markets.
So maybe let's come back to, I'd love to get your perspective, because I think you started, you're Canadian. Started a Canadian company. I'm Canadian, but I know you've expanded also into the US, and I think you're seeing investment decisions, adoption, integration of care now on both sides of the border. What are like some of the differences that you're seeing, and where are you seeing more adoption, traction, and support? And like, if you're open to being super candid about it, I think it's just an interesting dialogue to have, which is like, where, how does the Canadian economy and investors support Canadian startups, and where and how are Canadian startups possibly succeeding or failing?
So fundamentally, across the board, people acknowledge that our healthcare system, pre-pandemic, post-pandemic, however you want to call it, is in tatters. Okay, whether you're in the U.S. or you're in Canada, well, it's really in tatters. Specifically, even in our vertical, if we're looking at maternal healthcare, supporting families and that growth of families is abysmal. We just don't. And so how do we do that better? Well, I've seen is that now that we've started making some traction in the US market, the adoption in the US market is a lot easier. It's a lot faster, less education. And it's not because we're not educated in Canada. I think we have been used to a certain system. And even though we want to make change, there's behavioral changes that need to take place. And that's where we focus a lot of our, you know, strategy for this year and next year is, how do we target that? How do we look at that behavior change? The US market that we've entered specifically has been the southeastern part of the US market. So we look at states like Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina. And the reason for that is because there are kind of what we call maternal deserts there. Folks have money to spend. Providers need better technologies and tools. It's not as crowded as something like, you know, San Francisco or New York. And people are willing to try different solutions to help improve care.
Well, I think congrats. I think it's amazing to see that you are able to very quickly, within a year since we last chatted, already breach into growth in Canada and the US. I am hopeful that Canadians will continue to adopt this and maybe put the Americans to our south a little bit at shame. We should be proud of amazing Canadian innovation like what you're building and support it. And we know that our healthcare system is equally challenged. And so our ability to adopt better solutions like Treehouse is important. I know we're coming up to time. I want to make sure that we close out on letting people know where they can find out more about Treehouse and see if there's anything else, you know, now that you've got an additional year of wisdom in this space, for other founders that need to hear it, or any investors or people that are practitioners potentially that need to hear it that are listening in today, to make sure they hear kind of some closing words from you and the Treehouse.
If they're willing to learn more about what it is that we're doing and the impact we're making across Canada and into the US, I'm very keen to continue the conversation. Similarly, help founders also talk about the kinks that they're going through in their product development. They can connect with us and with me specifically through our website, growwithtreehouse.ca, or they can find me on LinkedIn, my name, and happy to connect with them there.
I love it. So we'll make sure that's all in the show notes. And when we post this, we're going to make sure that everyone shares posts or tags at least one additional pharmacy or healthcare provider, especially if they're in the Canadian ecosystem, to help get that word out. So maybe that'll be part of our mission when we release this episode, so they can listen in, understand what's going on, and hopefully reach out to Treehouse to figure out where it can fit into how they're thinking about providing care, better care to Canadians in our healthcare ecosystem. Americans too, I'm not going to shy away, but I want to create a bit of a Canadian rally around this. I think it's important. Thank you so much for coming on today, Julia. I appreciate, you know, all the knowledge and insight you've shared of your one-year journey. I look forward to hopefully connecting again soon and seeing the continued progress. And, you know, we're always rooting for you. So thank you. Thanks to everyone that tuned in. And we'll catch you on the next episode.
You've been listening to the Pitch Please podcast. Pitch Please. Pitch Please. Hosted by Mike Thibodeau. Tune in for regular episodes and show notes at pitchplease.ca. And make sure to give us a follow on your favorite podcast platform.
Pitch Please, a BlueMex podcast, is hosted by Michael Thibodeau and does not constitute a recommendation for any organization, product, or service. For more Pitch Please content, subscribe where you get your podcasts and visit BlueMex.io to join us on Discord.